Good morning. It's good to see everyone this morning. There are two big questions that I want us to consider this morning that John asks in his gospel. The first comes at the very beginning of the story, and the second one comes near the very end. And these are two questions that I believe are incredibly important for us to consider. I believe they get at the heart of what John's gospel is really all about. And they are two questions that I want us to be thinking about ourselves. The first question comes at the very beginning, and it's this. As John is standing around talking with his disciples, he sees Jesus coming by, and he declares, "Behold, the Lamb of God." And all of the listeners at this time, and all of John's readers who are Jewish, would have known exactly what he meant by, "Behold, the Lamb of God." This is kind of a big deal. And so these disciples leave, who are with John, leave him to follow Jesus because they want to know, is this the Lamb of God? What's it going to be like? What's he going to do? Jesus, becoming aware that these guys are following him, turns around, and in the first recorded words of Jesus by John are a question. He looks at them and he says, "What do you want?" Not, "What do you want?" like he's mad, but "What are you seeking? What are you after? What do you hope for? What do you long for? What is it you want?" This is a very incisive question. It's a question that cuts to the very heart. And their response is beautiful and simple. They say, "Rabbi, where are you staying?" In other words, we want to be with you. We want what you want. We want to follow you. What do you want? That's an important question for us to think about. The second question I want us to consider comes near the end in chapter 18. I want us to consider this story together in just a moment. But right in the middle of this story, this courtroom scene, we have Pilate posing a question. And it's less of a question than it is a statement. But he asks, "What is truth? What are you seeking? What do you want? What are you after? And what do you believe? What is truth?" These are in questions that we want to ask of the principal players in this story. We want to wonder, what is the truth about the Jewish people? What do they want? We want to know, what is the truth about Pilate? What is it he wants? We want to know, what is the truth about Jesus, and what does he want? And finally, when it's all said and done, those questions are ones that we should ask of ourselves. What do we want? What are we seeking? What is truth? What do we believe? I want to first read this story. I want you to follow along with me. Let's get the whole scope of what's going on before we go back and consider each of the players in this story. In John chapter 18, starting in verse 28, they, meaning the Jews, the leaders, the chief priests, lead Jesus from the house of Caiaphas, who was the high priest, to the governor's headquarters. It was early in the morning. Now, they themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters because they were worried about being defiled so that they might not eat the Passover. And so Pilate goes outside and says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, would we be here? Would we have delivered him over to you?" And Pilate said to them, "Take him for yourselves and judge him by your own law." And the Jews said, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to the death." This was, of course, to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken about the death that he was going to die. And so Pilate enters his headquarters again, and he called Jesus to him, and he asks, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or are others saying it to you about me?" And Pilate responds, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own chief priests, your own people have delivered you over to me. What is it you've done?" And Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my followers would be fighting to prevent me from being handed over to them. But my kingdom is not of this world." And Pilate asks, "Are you then the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says, "You say that I'm the king of the Jews, but it's for this purpose I was born. It's for this purpose I come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. And everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And Pilate said, what is truth? And then Pilate went back outside to the Jews and he said, I find no guilt in this man. However, you have a custom that at the Passover, I can release someone to you. Shall I release him? And they said, no, give us Barabbas instead. And Barabbas, by the way, was a robber. Or another translation might read, insurrectionist. Then Pilate took Jesus and he flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and they put it on his head and they dressed him in a purple robe and they said, Hail, the King of the Jews! And they struck him with their hands. And Pilate went out again to the Jews and said, See, I am bringing this man to you so that you might know I find no fault in him. And Jesus came out, and Pilate said, Behold the man. And when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, Crucify him! Crucify him! And Pilate said, Take him yourselves. I find no guilt in him. And the Jews answered, We have a law, and according to that law, anyone who makes himself out to be the Son of God must be put to death. And Pilate was more afraid. And then Pilate entered his headquarters again, and he said, Where are you from? And Jesus would not answer, and Pilate said, Will you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have the authority to either release you or to crucify you? And Jesus said, You have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, the one who has handed you over to me has the greater sin. And from then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar's. Anyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. And when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat. And he said to the Jews, Behold your king. And the Jews cried out, Away with him! Crucify him! And Pilate asked, Shall I crucify your king? And the Jews said, We have no king but Caesar. This is an incredible story. It's one that John spends more time with than any of the other gospel writers because I think there is something John wants us to understand about this particular scene, about the way he has told the story of Jesus. The way John tells the story of Jesus, probably more than any of the other writers, is the revelation of God in the person of Jesus. To John, Jesus is what God is like. It's who God is and how he acts in the world. And so first, let's look at the Jews. What is the truth about the Jews? Who does John mean when he uses the designation again and again throughout his letter, quote-unquote, the Jews? I don't think he necessarily means the whole Jewish people because he takes great pains to point out that Jesus was a Jew, that salvation comes from the Jews. I think it's more likely he has in mind the Jewish leaders. But I think as a metaphor, John develops the idea of the Jews as being anyone who is resistant to the revelation of God in Jesus. So the Jews become this idea of those who would resist who Jesus is. Now you notice when they bring Jesus to Pilate, they don't first tell him why they are there or what they are after. It is only until Pilate says, well, why don't you take him away and judge him, that they have to admit we can't, because what we are really after is the death sentence. And they know that according to Roman law, that the Romans held strictly the right to pronounce death and carry out that sentence. And so they have to be here. So what accusation do they bring? What is it that has caused them to come to this moment to bring Jesus before Pilate? Pilate asks them that very question, and their answer seems ridiculous, doesn't it? Well, we wouldn't be here if he hadn't done something wrong. Has that ever worked for anyone ever in life? You hit your brother, your parents. Why did you do that? Well, he deserved it. I wouldn't have done it if he didn't deserve it. It seems a little silly, yet this is what they bring to Pilate. But when it comes down to it, and we have to understand what it is that drove them to this point, we go back to chapter 11, verses 48 through 53. We read the conversation that takes place between Caiaphas the high priest and the leaders. This is the moment in which they decide they are going to plot to kill Jesus. And it hangs on this verse. Caiaphas says, the high priest, if we let Jesus go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come, and they will take away both our place and our nation. They're not worried about whether or not he is who he says he is. They are not worried about possibly killing an innocent man. They are not worried about anything other than losing their political standing with Rome. They're concerned about Rome coming to take away the deal that they have. See, Rome wanted a good relationship, at least initially, with the Jews, and they were able to carry on and go about their business, and Rome left them alone, and peace flowed between the two, and they are concerned about losing that. Notice the timing. John tells us that it was early, which meant the fourth watch between 3 and 6 a.m. This is when the Jews choose to bring Jesus to Pilate's house. I mean, let the guy have some breakfast first. Why do they bring him here this early? Because they had things to do that day. John tells us that the Passover feast is coming. Many of them were likely presiding over elements of that feast. Important places, positions of power that they wanted to be there, to be a part of. And so they wanted to have this sentence carried out so that they could get on about their religious duties. And I think it's interesting that Jesus points out that while he was led in, or John points out that while Jesus was led inside, the Jews would not enter into Pilate's headquarters because they were worried about their purity. They were worried about their defilement status. In the back of their minds, they're thinking about Numbers 9, where there is a provision made for anyone who becomes defiled. They can still eat the Passover just a month later than everyone else. And one of the ways you could be defiled was by entering the dwelling place of a Gentile. They're concerned. Think about the irony of this. They are concerned about their purity as it stands on entering into the house of a Gentile, not about whether killing an innocent man might defile their souls. They are only concerned about themselves. It seems wildly hypocritical, doesn't it? Notice their increasing desperation. As time goes on and Pilate seems to be seeking ways to release them, more and more we see the answers to our questions. What are they after and what is truth to them? They ask for Barabbas rather than Jesus. When Pilate tries to offer them, here, you can have someone choose to be released to you, either someone who has actually done wrong and actually harmed the community, or Jesus, and they cry for the man who has actually done wrong. In chapter 19 and verse 12, they say, if you release him, you are no friend to Caesar. And then finally, in verse 15, notice their ultimate loss of self. We have no king but Caesar. Imagine God's disappointment at hearing they no longer consider him to be their king, but instead their king is this political figure. The truth about the Jews. What are they seeking? Only to protect their own interests. Only to protect the political favor they have with Rome. Only the illusion of purity and position of influence. What is truth? Truth is whatever they need it to be to get their way. What do you believe? Not much of anything, it seems. Now let's turn our attention to Pilate. Who is Pilate? What is his place in this story? We know that he is the governor of Judea. He was made the governor of Judea by his father-in-law, Tiberius, the emperor. He was just a Roman soldier that got put in this special position because of his connection. But then he makes some big mistakes. Over and over and over again, he makes mistakes with the Jews. Tiberius gave him one job. Keep the peace. Don't upset things. And what does he do? The first time he comes into Jerusalem, he comes bearing his standards, which many governors before him had neglected or stopped doing for a fear of offending the Jews. He thinks that's a weak practice, so he does it. The Jews riot. Next, he steals money from the temple to pay for an aqueduct. Without telling them. Once again, they riot. He kills some Galileans who are worshiping in the temple, and their blood mixes with their sacrifices. Luke points that out in chapter 11. Again, they riot. And then finally, he brings in these votive shields and places them all around the palace. These were shields used for emperor worship. And again, they riot, only this time they write to the emperor. And the emperor is furious and basically sends Pilate a letter that says, "One more strike and you're out. Keep the peace." This is the history that we bear in this story. Pilate hates the Jewish people, but he also fears them. He knows he needs to appease them. He knows he needs to listen to them. Otherwise, he might lose his standing in Rome. And so when they come to his house early in the morning, he can't do much about it. And he has to listen to what they say. The claim of kingship was a serious matter. We don't know exactly what they say here. John doesn't tell us. But his first question as he begins this interrogation lets us know. He comes to Jesus and he says, "Are you a king of the Jews?" He has to take this seriously. When Jesus asks him, "Are you saying this of your own or because they said it to me?" His disdain shows in his response. "Well, I'm not a Jew, am I?" Jesus might very well ask, "I don't know, are you?" Because his next response sounds a lot like the Jewish reasoning. "They turned you over to me, so clearly you have done something." It becomes obvious that this trial is no ordinary trial. Jesus isn't responding the way Pilate wants him to. It's not going the way he thinks it will. John presents Pilate as a man who is caught between a rock and a hard place. And only Pilate will decide at the end of this kangaroo court whether or not he has positioned himself as, quote unquote, a Jew, someone who is either against Jesus or not. Notice his attempts and ultimate failure to find a way out of this difficult situation. Over and over again, he says, "I find no fault in this man." He even appeals to them by saying, "Hey, you have this custom, let me help you out." Maybe seeking to appease them even further, he has Jesus flogged and humiliated, hoping that that will be enough. Again and again, "I find no fault." He even begs Jesus, "Give me something to work with. Where are you from? Why won't you speak to me?" And it's ultimately in the face of political disaster, another disgrace, that Pilate goes against what he seemingly knows to be wrong and turns Jesus over to be crucified. What is the truth about Pilate? What are you seeking? Only to protect his own interests and political standing with Rome. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Pilate, what is truth? Not worth holding on to for what he might lose. What is truth? Pilate says, "I am not a Jew, am I?" Pilate, I think you might be. And finally, we turn our attention to Jesus, the center of this storm. Now, what has struck me upon closer examination of this story is I don't think Jesus is the one on trial. Now, of course, he's the prisoner and he has come before Pilate, but I don't think Jesus, from his point of view, is the one on trial. I think it's Pilate and the Jews that are on trial, and Jesus instead is the one in control. Notice in verse 32, what seems like a throwaway line, John wants us to understand that all of this was done to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what method he would die. Over and over again throughout the Gospel of John, Jesus talks about his death. He has known all along where this is going. He has known all along how this would all end up, and yet he is walking this path anyway. In chapter 19, verse 11, he said, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above." Jesus is the one in control. He turns the tables by responding to Pilate with a question of his own. "Are you saying this? Do you believe this, Pilate? Or are you simply saying what others have said to you about me?" He is putting it on Pilate to decide. Jesus becomes the interrogator. When Pilate says, "So are you a king?" Jesus simply responds, "Well, that's what you say." Again, Pilate, you should decide. When Jesus finally responds to Pilate's questions about being a king, he does so in a way that reveals not only his true nature and the nature of his rule and reign, but also he pulls together themes from throughout the gospel. Notice what he says about the nature of his kingship. My kingdom is not of this world. If it had been, my servants would be fighting, but my kingdom is not. Throughout the Gospel of John, there's an emphasis on the truth about where Jesus is from. In chapter 3, verse 31, John the Baptist says, he who comes is from above. Jesus says in chapter 8, verse 23, you are from below, but I am from above. You are of this world, but I am not. In verse 42 of chapter 8, he says, if God were your father, you would love me because I came from God. I came not of my own, but because he sent me. Christ doesn't deny that he has a kingdom. He simply denies that it is a worldly kingdom built on worldly principles. When he says it is not of this world, he means it is not from here. It is not of this place. It is not about power and rule. It is about humility and service. And what about the purpose of his kingship? What Jesus says next is a beautiful declaration of why he is here. He says simply, I was born, I have come here to bear witness to the truth. The truth, anyone who listens to my voice is of the truth. Jesus didn't come to earth to find truth. He came to bear witness that it already exists, that God is and has always been at work in the world on behalf of his people. When he says, everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice, it calls our attention back to John chapter 10, verse 11, when he says, I am the good shepherd. The sheep hear my voice and respond. And the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. In chapter 8, he says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness and will not pass into judgment, but they will have the light of life. And then finally, Jesus sets himself up as the judge. He has spoken the truth to Pilate about who he is. He has declared the nature of his kingdom and his kingship, the nature of his purpose. Earlier in chapter 12, Jesus said, the one who rejects me and does not receive my word has a judge. The word that I have spoken will judge him on the last day. Because I have not spoken of my own authority, but the Father who sent me has given me the command what to say and what to speak. In chapter 5, he said, I say to you, truly, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life. Those who hear the word of Jesus, who witness the truth but do not listen, he says, they are not my sheep, and they prefer darkness over light. What is the truth about Jesus? What is he seeking? Jesus seeks only to protect and to uphold the will of the Father. What is truth? Truth is that in just a few days' time, the truth of who he is will be fully unveiled in his death, his burial, and his resurrection. So the question we have to ask ourselves is the same we've been asking all morning. What is the truth about you and I? What are we seeking? What is it that we want? And how is that shown in how we live our lives every single day? My prayer and my hope is that we can answer the question, what do we want with, I simply want to listen to his voice. I want to walk in the light as he is in the light. And I want to proclaim the truth. What is the truth? The truth is that Christ is king. We have no king but Jesus. This morning, we want to invite you to proclaim that truth yourself. Every day and how you live and how you choose to walk and interact with other people. It may be that there is someone here this morning who has yet to commit to that truth, to commit to proclaiming Christ as King, to put him on in baptism. Whatever your need might be this morning, we ask that you please come while we stand and sing our invitation song.